You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
May the 21st, 2020. We knew these numbers would be coming. It's depressing to know they're coming, and then to see them, it's even more depressing. But it's reality of what we have in the U.S. at this point. The latest unemployment numbers coming out, and our jobless rate now, unemployed, 38.6 million. Our economy was in such great shape until we got hit by the virus. And then you have to question how much of the wrecking of the economy goes to the virus or maybe overreacting. But maybe in the beginning we needed that particular start. But then again, is enough enough? Look at states that have opened up, and so far their numbers are really looking good. I mean, they expected a bloodbath in Florida, Georgia. It's not happening. 600 physicians have signed a letter together urging that we open our nation quickly. And in fact, they're concerned also in the sense that we have a lot of other untreated illnesses and issues, and we might end up having mass casualties across the nation for items other than coronavirus because folks have been neglecting, reference heart treatment, things of this nature. Today, the president is going to be at the Ford plant in Michigan. He's going to be seeing the on-hand response they had to the pandemic. This is where they reconfigured one of the operations during the pandemic, shifted from making cars to ventilators, much like Detroit did the same during World War II. At that time, Ford's Willow Run plant started producing one B-24 Liberator airplane per hour. That's an amazing, amazing thought when you consider that. But that's what we had to do at that point. At this point, getting the nation reopened, critical, absolutely critical. And the issue we continue to have is, what can we do to what point? And some of these businesses are told they can open, like a restaurant, but you can only do maybe 50% of your occupancy. A lot of companies, as far as restaurants and so forth, they're not going to be able to survive like that. They can't stay open with only 50% of the occupancy allowed. That means less folks being employed as well to wait the other tables. Where do we stand now? Worldwide infections, 5 million. Deaths, 330,000. U.S., 1.5 million infections. Deaths reported at 94,000. And here come the Democrats. With us approaching the 100,000 mark, which we will hit, they want to have the U.S. flags across the nation lowered to half-staff, half-mast, depending on if you're land or sea. Because they want to use it to a reminder, they say, for the lives lost. But I will tell you this. It's not in their respect for those lives lost. It's to use it as a PR tool against President Trump. Because if you drive around and see all the flags down, not all the way at the top, it's going to remind you, in their view, Trump is to blame. There's a Columbia University study out, a new study, and it says if the country had locked down 2 weeks earlier than it did, it might have prevented 84% of the deaths 2 weeks earlier. The first case was reported at the end of January. It wasn't until mid-March that we urged Americans to avoid groups and limit travel. Cities started closing. But again, it's all going to be on Trump's fault. It cannot be the governor's fault, right? Well, we got a lot of questions coming up over the next 2 hours. What about Florida? It was not a death trap, but it's become a media trap. New questions about the Flynn investigation. Hans von Spakovsky will join us. Mail-in voting fraud. Democrats are convinced Trump will cheat. And by the way, Trump is endorsing a Democrat. And there's a new survey about Michelle Obama running with Joe Biden. I'll tell you about that. And a lot of folks, of course, might remember drive-in movies. Now with the coronavirus, normal theaters are shut down. They're wanting to watch at home or maybe go out, and drive-in movies might be making a comeback. It all comes back around, doesn't it? So that means if you got some of those wild, outdated, wide, or extra-narrow ties, whatever date they are now, you can bring them back. It's the old all over again. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
COVID-19, coronavirus, is real. But despite all the hype, the fake news, there's no need to panic. Still, you want your environment safe for customers, employees, family. What can be done? How much would it cost? Who to trust? I can tell you, Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental would determine the best way to protect against COVID-19. Wellington Environmental can do it at a very reasonable cost. When it comes to trust, for more than 30 years, Wellington Environmental has been working with hospitals, nursing homes, universities, schools, even private homes. You don't last more than 30 years if you're not doing an excellent job. COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has the experience to give you peace of mind. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Our data is available. Our data is transparent. In fact, Dr. Birx has talked multiple times about how Florida has the absolute best data.
That is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis disputing charges and allegations and complaints and claims that his state is manipulating the data, that they should be showing more COVID-19 cases than they are, that they should be showing more deaths, that they're in fact trying to hide information. And of course, it's a red state, so this is something just perfect for the mass media to rush into. I don't see them doing that with New York and the Governor Cuomo asking, what are you doing about all these deaths in your nursing homes? Have you really accounted for all those properly or not? I'll get back to that in a moment. This question about Florida and Georgia, questioning transparency of their coronavirus data reporting. Now, there is a report from, let me see, what's the source on this? I'm not sure of the source. It's on a CNN site, so I have questions about who actually put this out. But supposedly, according to this article, at least four states have been combining data from two different test results, potentially providing a misleading picture of when and where the coronavirus spread. They're talking about Virginia, Texas, Georgia, and Vermont, and apparently they are being quoted as saying they have been adding two numbers to their totals, viral test results and antibody test results. Combining the two, according to the experts, that would provide an inaccurate picture of where and when the virus spread. Georgia says we're doing what the CDC advised us. No word from the CDC if that's what they've been advising. Of course, the CDC continues to change its view on what's good and safe on a daily basis. Don't get masks. You don't need. No, yeah, you do need masks. You can't touch anything. It'll be coated with coronavirus. Oh, now it doesn't matter. It might not be on the surface. If it's on the surface, it won't be damaging to you. That's our CDC. So if you're relying on the CDC, be you a governor or the president, you might be a little confused as well. It's understandable. But what we have now is many coming forward and trying to put more on us on the White House, saying this guy did not do what he should have. And, of course, they're echoing what Obama said the other day, that there's been total chaos with this operation. Total chaos. And yet, you remember when President Trump decided, well, to stop flights coming in from China? Let me take a moment aside here, because some of you said, well, wait a minute. We had a lot of folks still coming in from China after he did. Yes, but they were Americans coming home. We're bringing them home and getting them out of the hotbed at that time. We didn't know how bad it was. It was still developing, because we're getting false lies from China and the World Health Organization. But the president took that step, and then he also started shutting down traffic from Europe. But as far as actually closing down the nation, even though we had the first case at the end of January, it was mid-March that the Trump administration said we need to start avoiding groups, limit travel. That's when New York started closing schools, and because they did it at that time, they want to say, well, Trump should have given us a heads up. The governors of the states, you were elected to oversee and secure your population. You are so good about putting the blame on the feds and the White House and the governor, and particularly this president, if it's to your advantage. You don't want to take credit. And you certainly won't take the blame when it's due you. You'll suck up all the credit that someone else should get. But when it comes to blame, you're going to quickly point out the others. Ron DeSantis, again, the Florida governor, made that point. He was talking to reporters. He said, what you guys have been doing, if you want to look for an issue, if you want to find out where this nation is confused and lost and absolutely unsure, can I step out my door? I mean, my God, if I step out my door, if I venture a foot from my front door, am I going to die? Here are the words of Governor DeSantis.
Our data is available. Our data is transparent. In fact, Dr. Birx has talked multiple times about how Florida has the absolute best data. So any insinuation otherwise is just typical partisan narrative trying to be spun. And part of the reason is that because you got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks. Florida's going to be next. Just like Italy. Wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. Not only do we have a lower death rate, well, we have way lower deaths generally. We have a lower death rate than the Acela Corridor, D.C., everyone up there. We have a lower death rate than the Midwest, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. But even in our region, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida has the lower death rate. And I was the number one landing spot from tens of thousands of people leaving the number one hot zone in the world to come to my state.
He's talking about those getting out of New York City or New Jersey because it was a hot spot and they started rushing down to Florida. Yes, he was the number one landing spot. If you recall, they were starting to check passengers coming in from New York and New Jersey. But you don't hear that from the mainstream media. You don't hear the fact that how well they have done and that this far into their opening, and it's not near as bad as some were projecting. I mean, it's not even close. The models themselves have been updated, chewed up, thrown back out, recirculated, flushed around, and come back out again, and they're all confusing. We were told the other day these numbers that originally came out of the King's College in England, that supposedly would be the perfect numbers to set everything in motion, it's wrong. Several experts tried to take the same criteria, the formula, or however they were looking at it, a logarithm, and tried to recreate algorithm, and tried to recreate what they did in those first models, they can't get it to happen. I'm not the world's biggest on math and smartest. I will agree with that. I've always told you, if you start telling me a train leaves a station at 8 a.m. going 60 miles an hour, and I don't care. I'm not going to compute it. I don't care if it reaches a destination or when it does. But with these things, These numbers are critical if they're proper and not fueled by mass media hysteria to frighten everyone. I told you earlier, there's another survey, this one out of Columbia University, that if we had locked down 2 weeks earlier than we did, that would have prevented 84% of the deaths, 82% of the cases. Now, I guess that would be accurate if you look at the deaths that occurred in the first 2 weeks. I guess, is that what they're looking at? Okay, those would not have occurred. Is that, it's still speculation. I'm not going to knock it. It's the way they had to do it, epidemiological modeling. But again, I don't know how much of it is being tainted and shifted because we have so many experts on either side. I told you earlier, we had doctors to come together, about 600, send a letter that they all agreed on about these restrictions. These physicians also, on a conference call, said the real threat to Americans right now is a lack of access to health care. It's fear, not the virus, they say, leading to dangerous and deadly health outcomes. One doctor said, I just feel there's a big disconnect between what the average American thinks is going on and what's actually going on. He said that there was a middle-aged woman he met in the emergency room. She had fallen while she was attempting to color her own hair because she could not go to the salon. She had a broken hip, shoulder, obviously required surgery. He said, you got cases out there struggling with drug addiction, things of that nature. He said, if you watch the 6 o'clock news here in L.A., one of them saying, if you watch the 6 o'clock news here in L.A. to know why they're avoiding the health care system, because we've allowed the media, as Governor DeSantis was saying, we've allowed the media to stigmatize COVID positively. He said they give 2 statistics every time. They open their newscast with the number of people who have tested positive, and immediately adjacent to that, the number who died. Now, I've done the same thing on this program, but I'm always trying to put in context with you, and I question every time if the numbers of the U.S. deaths are accurate. But the doctor says every time they do that, it puts in the viewer's mind a nexus between COVID positivity and death. It has stigmatized our health care system. People are afraid to access the health care system for fear of becoming COVID positive, as if that's the worst possible outcome. Dr. Mark Siegel, a physician who's an analyst for Fox News, was asked about that letter. Do you agree with it? And then his other comments.
I agree with him totally, but I think that the focus should be on the governors rather than the president, because I think the president is actually trying to reopen this country, and he's very aware of this issue. What is this issue? People going to emergency rooms are afraid to go there. There's a decrease of people going with heart attacks, with strokes, with infections, with appendixes bursting. We're having a tremendous problem with cancer screening. Ainsley, cancer screening is down 90% according to McKesson. And there's 2.5 million doses of childhood vaccines we're not getting. Probably the worst problem of all, Ainsley, is alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide. All of this is occurring at a rapid rate now because of the unemployment, because of the lockdown. We're estimating 75,000 deaths from deaths of despair. Deaths of despair, meaning suicide, alcohol, or drug abuse.
Dr. Siegel.
That's probably going to end up being more than the virus.
Thank you, Dr. Siegel. I'm glad you got it in. She kept trying to interrupt it because she'd just seen the new numbers about the unemployment. She wanted to get to that right away. Let him finish his train of thought on that issue. Yeah, I know. It's easy to say that here. I might have been in the same situation. But she kept trying to interrupt it. She wanted to make the point clear. And this point, as I was laying out previously, from the doctors that I was quoting and the letters they're sending out, that this has not gone the way it should have. In fact, one of them points out that their hospital has laid off 50% of the technicians, emergency physicians cutting hours by 35%, stating, we've never seen anything like this in our career. And then another doctor, an orthopedic surgeon in Atlanta, said, this concept of social distancing, I think, has gotten away from us. There's no scientific data to back up social distancing. Well, then that takes us right back to that Columbia report that said if we had started it 2 weeks earlier, we wouldn't have as many deaths. Really? Maybe? Maybe not. And if you're looking for problems and issues, why don't you also look at the successes and praise the success and say, look how they've done it. If you do it this way, it'll probably work just fine. Again, Governor DeSantis in Florida.
So we succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative, it challenges their assumption, so they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
That's exactly right. It's the conspiracy theory on steroids as they began to push it, and it's always, always aimed at the Trump White House. No questions about Cuomo and the nursing care, how they blew up nursing homes with COVID patients, even New Jersey. There's a report coming out now showing the elder care in Pennsylvania. The average age of those who died of COVID-19 in Pennsylvania, 80 years old. More than two-thirds of them were residents of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. There's your issue. It's not the whole nation. It's certain areas that are vulnerable. That would have been the proper approach. Well, of course, in the beginning, yeah, it was a little fearful. And if you didn't do something, then everybody would have been saying you didn't do enough. And then when you do what you should do, it's still not enough. All right, I'll get off this pedestal for a while. I want to take a break. When we come back, more developments involving the Michael Flynn case. And later in this hour, Hans von Spakovsky will join us. And also, I want to share an opinion piece by Laura Trump about why the Democrats embraced Biden but rejected Kavanaugh. Coming up.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. Redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I would love to see the release of that transcript. Apparently the Washington Post or the New York Times had it, but has the defense been allowed to see it? No. No defense lawyer for General Flynn has been allowed to hear the recording or see the transcript. And frankly, I would want both because I can't trust the FBI or the CIA or the NSA or whoever it was to do an accurate transcription of anything given the lies I've seen in the 302.
That is Sidney Powell, the lawyer, the new lawyer for Michael Flynn. And, of course, they've convinced the Justice Department that you have no case. Justice Department has said we are dismissing the case, but the judge is still hesitating and ain't doing it. He wants to play ball and with the Democrats and all of his liberal friends. We're going to get into that in more detail in a few moments with Hans von Spakovsky. But Sidney Powell said we want to see more details. No one's been able to see the actual transcript. She said, I think it's because the word sanctions does not appear in them, which they were suggesting that Flynn was doing something about sanctions before he and the Trump team were actually in office. Well, let's see the transcripts. And when she mentions the 302, the lies she said we've seen in the 302, with the original 302, which is what the FBI agents fill out when they do such an interview, the original is, well, it's missing. I don't know. The dog ate it? I don't know. Maybe Lisa Page used it to draw a heart on and send it to her lover, Agent Smurf or Stroke. You know, we've had on the program numerous times Fred Flights, president CEO of Center for Security Policy. He was on Fox News yesterday, and he was also addressing this Flynn case, and there's so many things he said that are still wrong and how this went down.
My guess would be that there is a standing FISA warrant to spy on Russians, so they didn't have to obtain any court approval for this. and they could pretend they were going after Kislyak when they knew all along they were going after Flynn. But it was extraordinary to bring the unmasked name of an American and to show it to policymakers, because that still had to go, that should have undergone an unmasking procedure. Someone gave Comey the raw transcript of this phone call, which Comey was sharing with senior officials. It's a pretty major violation of the rules.
Major violation of the rules. And don't forget that meeting in the Oval Office when you had Director of National Intelligence at the time, Clapper, and then CIA Director Brennan, along with then FBI Director Comey, and of course Vice President Biden and Obama, all in there, and they're all talking about the Flynn case. This thing, every time you move one part of it aside, you find something else that looks really suspicious. May or may not be, but because they've covered it up in so much of their cover-up material, you can't tell what's fact, what's fiction, and what might actually be a string leading to the real dynamite. So Michael Flynn, is he going to get justice or not? We're going to take a break. When we come back, Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation has been closely following this. And I want his take on this judge that's been messing around, and all he had to do is take the word from the DOJ, well, we're not going to pursue it, the case should be dismissed, we're not prosecuting it. And the judge suddenly opened the door for any attorneys who came wanted to come in and argue that Michael Flynn to go to jail. Most of them coming forward, linked to Democrats. Do you smell something there? I do. Stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDruryLaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Always glad to welcome back on board from the Heritage Foundation, Hans A. von Spakovsky. Hans, welcome aboard again, sir.
Larry, thanks for having me back aboard.
Well, of course, I wanted to get your take on, I noticed you put out a piece the other day that, of course, we raised this with you previously, that will Flynn get justice? And now you're still raising that basic question, aren't you? Is it going to be justice or not? Because we got this judge, it's just kind of, I think he's gone wacko. What is your opinion?
Yeah, I think we really have kind of a rogue judge here, not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Just to quickly summarize for folks, you know, the Justice Department went into the Flynn case and filed a motion to dismiss the prosecution. And the reason they moved to dismiss it was they said that, look, we can't actually prove this case. And there are two reasons for that. One, it turns out that the FBI actually had no valid basis for interviewing Flynn. And remember, it was the interview with Flynn that they ended up charging him with, because they claimed that he lied to the FBI agent. And if they had no valid basis for an investigation, you can't charge somebody with lying to the FBI. But it also turned out that there was all kinds of exculpatory evidence that prosecutors had that they didn't turn over to the defense. So they filed a motion to dismiss. The judge should have just granted it. You know, he's a judge. He's not a prosecutor. He's not the executive branch. You can't prosecute a case if the prosecutor says there's no case to prosecute. Instead of doing that, the judge has opened up the case to third parties to file amicus briefs, and he even appointed a former federal judge who had penned an op-ed attacking the administration to argue against the government's case.
There's no justice there like that. I mean, I thought supposed to be unbiased, but he's got a judge that's already done an op-ed, as you said, challenging Flynn, the Trump and everything, and he's going to put him in charge of it? And the other point is, every time the Flynn people said we'd like to have, a third party help in the case, he rejected it.
That's exactly right. And that's because the rules don't allow it. He's now going against the rules of the court and his own prior rulings. I mean, he's just off the reservation, if I can use that term. So here's what happened last week. The lawyer for Michael Flynn basically went over the judge's head. She went to the Court of Appeals, and she filed what's called a writ of mandamus. That's something that's done very rarely. And what it is a petition that she's filed with the Court of Appeals asking the Court of Appeals to order the judge on the case to basically fulfill his duty. And his duty is to dismiss the case. I actually think she has a very good case on the law. The problem she has is that, and Larry, I don't know if you remember this, but remember during the Obama administration, there was this big fight over the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. Why? Because Democrats came in and said, oh, we need to add three new judges to that court.
Right.
And there was no need for it. That Court of Appeals, the judges there have the least workload of any appeals court judges in the entire country. The only reason they wanted those three judges added, which they did because they controlled the Senate at the time, was to upset the court and make sure that liberals controlled a majority of the court. They stacked it.
Not just with the appointments that are already there, but let's add more to it. And I've heard them talk about, and I know you have too, that, well, maybe we need to have 20 Supreme Court justices. In other words, let's redo everything, because there is no provision as to how many justices we have to have on the Supreme Court.
Right. So we're basically now in a holding pattern, waiting to see what will the Court of Appeals do with this writ of mandamus. Will they step in and order the district court judge to finally do what he should have done in the first place, which is dismiss the case and end the entire Flynn case.
The timetable, I would have thought that would have been almost immediate.
Well, they do need to act very quickly. It was filed Tuesday of last week. I'm sorry, Tuesday of this week, I should say.
Yeah, it goes Tuesday by. Yeah, a couple days ago,
It's just a couple of days ago, so hopefully they will act quickly, but you know, we're at the mercy of the Court of Appeals and what they decide to do with it.
What have you been? What's your take on this unmasking the way it's been going down? We had a clip from Fred Flight's Center for Security Policy before you came on. He was talking about that the way this has gone down, that he thinks that they basically had a standing FISA to eavesdrop on any Russian connection, and they pulled Flynn into it, and then they made a point to use him since he was connected to Trump. And the letter Susan Rice wrote herself, did she write that letter to remind herself or protect herself, because she'd already been made the scapegoat once before by this administration?
Yeah, that was very much a CYA memo, which I think everybody knows what that means.
Yeah.
I think people don't understand that this is the biggest, I think it's the biggest scandal in decades, because what all this unmasking means is that it appears that the Obama administration was using our intelligence services against political opponents domestically. And that is that is the worst abuse of governmental power that I can remember in my lifetime. Nixon would have liked to have done it, but he never actually got around to doing it. The Obama administration actually looks like they were doing it.
With this Rice email that she sent herself and so forth, what's come out of it basically is that the only complaint apparently was against that no wrongdoing by Flynn. It's just that Comey thought he was talking to the Russians too much.
Right. Which I'm sitting there going, you're the head of the FBI. You're supposed to know the law. There's nothing illegal about the incoming national security advisor for the new administration talking to the Russian ambassador or any other foreign government ambassador. That's part of his job. That clearly was just an excuse, I think, to go after Flynn. I think people may forget. Remember, Flynn actually was an appointee during the Obama administration. Remember, he was the head of the National Intelligence.
And Obama didn't like him. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he was let go. Why was he let go? Because he publicly criticized the Obama administration over actions they were taking in places like Afghanistan. So they did not like him for political reasons.
And then, of course, as they have this meeting in the Oval Office, and they're going through, at that time, January 5th, you know, after the election, before the inauguration,
right,
and discussing what do we know, and Obama's cited, even in Rice's letter, that, well, I'm not trying to interfere, I just want to know. That whole thing stinks to me. They're all gathered in there, and they just kind of, and we're supposed to believe that nothing out of line was addressed or directed? I mean, we still have so many questions about this.
Yeah, we do. I'm not sure we're ever going to get them answered, but like I said, this is a scandal that really ought to be paid attention to by the American people, because it is so insidious, the idea that our intelligence services, which are supposed to be protecting us against foreign espionage and terrorism, that they could have been used and actually had people inside cooperating in being used for domestic political purposes. I just find that absolutely shocking, and we need people who are involved in this to be held accountable.
All right. Well, quickly before we let you go, and up in this last minute, you obviously with your expertise on the election laws and so forth through the FEC, I think at this moment Nancy Pelosi and the others are all holding a news conference that we're supposed to, talking about we want to make sure we get everybody get to vote, and we're going to do more bailouts. Michigan the other day was sending out 7.5 million ballot applications, not ballots, but ballot applications. But what's your take on how this is going at this point?
Well, I think this consistent push that we have an all-mail election in November is unwise and unneeded. Look, states all over the country are already, some have already opened up. Others are in the process of opening up. If the country's back open for business in November, why would we need to mail our ballots in rather than go to our neighborhood polling place and vote?
Well, of course, they're still pushing. They just say, we'd rather have folks mail it in, Trump has said, and I agree, that's opening up fraud.
It does make elections more vulnerable, and it makes it easier to cheat with mail-in ballot.
When we look at some of the states and some of their primaries coming up, they're going to be happening for November, and they've been trying to make the same case. But your base position, again, is you open up mail-in ballots, you just have more chances for voter fraud.
Yep, and I voted in person this week in my town elections, and I didn't have any problems at all.
All right. Hans, again, we appreciate you joining us, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll do it again. Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation. Yeah, that's something we're going to get into in the next hour in more detail about how the libs are beginning to push again, knocking on that door. We want mail-in ballots. And they're even saying that they're afraid Trump will steal the election. They're afraid Trump will steal the election. He doesn't need to steal anything. All right, we'll take a short break. When we come back, I got something I want to share with you that I don't think you want to miss.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I have to admit I was a little distracted as we went into that break because I was watching a bulletin pop up and I was trying to make sense of it before we went to the break. I couldn't, but now I've got it in front of me. Word coming out, the Senate has voted to confirm Congressman John Ratcliffe of Texas, Republican, as the next director of National Intelligence. Of course, now he's doing this as the intelligence community is still in the midst of this political firestorm over whether some of the Obama folks had improperly unmasked intel reports going after Flynn and others. Ratcliffe's nomination voted out of the Senate Intel Committee earlier this week, and now he is approved by the Senate to be the Director of National Intelligence. And Congressman Rubio, I should say Senator Rubio of Florida, said, "The Department of National Intelligence role is crucial to our national security. I look forward to working with Director Ratcliffe as he takes over." He says the time for the threats for the nation are many, and it's critical we get this done. And Ratcliffe says, "I will be dropping all political alliances, so we'll have to see about replacing him in Texas." Laura Trump put out an opinion piece on Fox News earlier today I want to share with you, pointing out five top Democrat women slammed Kavanaugh but embraced Biden, and their question is simply, why? She's talking about how the prominent figures, the hashtag MeToo movement, have already reached a clear verdict on former Vice President Biden. It's more important to believe him than the woman accusing him, Tara Reid. Of course, she says for more than 3 years, the radical left smeared Trump and his supporters, falsely portraying conservatives as enemies of female empowerment and enablers of sexism. And she said they became especially partisan during the confirmation process for now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, falsely accused of sexually assaulting multiple women. But again, there was really no proof. She said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, of course, one of those leading the charge against Kavanaugh, but now embraces Biden. In 2018, Pelosi said Kavanaugh had exhibited behavior, quote, that was not suitable for a person who would be a judge on any court, much less the Supreme Court. And, of course, her reaction to Biden allegedly sexually assaulting a former member of his staff, her remarks, "I do support Joe. Joe is Joe. I'm satisfied with how he's responded." That's it. Hillary Clinton, there's an enabler for you. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Laura Trump puts her in the crosshairs of this article, her column, I should say. She said Hillary Clinton was another one who had a lot to say about Kavanaugh. She said, "I heard the Senate testimony of Kavanaugh's accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. I judged it, quote, very credible. Very credible." She said, "You have to ask yourself, why would anybody put themselves through this if they did not believe they had important information to convey?" And Laura Trump says apparently Clinton has forgotten about that sanctimonious stance on Kavanaugh when she's endorsing Biden's presidential candidacy. Senator Elizabeth Warren, big committed hashtag MeToo activist. She supported impeaching Kavanaugh after he was confirmed. And, of course, not applying the same standard to Biden. Nope. Giving Biden another pass. She says, Senator Warren, after basically denying anything Tara Reid said, Senator Warren said of Biden's dismissal, his defense is both, quote, credible and convincing. What defense? He said, "I didn't do it," which is all he has right now. And the woman says he did. But they would simply suck up to Biden and accept his answer, where Kavanaugh, he could make the same thing. He kept saying, it's not true. And they said, "Oh, but it is." Biden has said the same thing. And this time they say, "Oh, you're right." Senator Gillibrand had asked at the time during the Kavanaugh hearing, "Do we value women in this country? Do we listen to women when they tell us about sexual trauma? Do we listen to their stories, or do we just disbelieve them as a matter of course? So here she is claiming you've got to believe the women. And now what's she done? She's coming forward, spoken, and says, Vice President Biden has denied these allegations, and I support Vice President Biden. Of course, she's looking to get on that ticket. And Senator Kamala Harris, another anti-Kavanaugh firebrand. She was absolutely saying we're doing a disservice to survivors everywhere with his confirmation. But when it comes to Biden, oh no, she's buying the Biden story as well. I'm glad Laura Trump did this because she laid it out so clearly. All of these hashtag Me Too liberals jumping all around wanting to burn Kavanaugh at the stake. And the allegations against Biden are just the same. It's just one word against another. Blasey Ford had no witnesses supported anything she had to say. There are none here. I don't know which one is telling the truth, but if you're going to say the women believe the women all the time, why not this time? Oh, yes, right. This is, this time, they got to look at Biden, one of their progressive leaders. Well, maybe not as progressive as they want, but he's the one they've got right now. All right, coming up in the next hour, we're going to take a little closer look at the effort to get another stimulus bill package out. And Nancy Pelosi answers a question about why she said getting dog poo on your shoes. Oh, you got to hear this. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.